Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, Lord of the Cold Brew.
And I am Sir Jimmy of House Nuts.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to Follow-Up Friday.
Does it feel good to be back on a Follow-Up Friday, Ez?
Oh my god, it does, dude. Bring it on, baby. This is where it's at, dude. Prime time.
Yeah.
Prime guys, time, baby.
We just recorded, by the way, for those of you guys who have been listening. I know we've had a ton of people sign up over there on Patreon. We just recorded what might be, honestly to God, the best episode of Bend the Knee ever, okay? Over on Patreon. It was great to just bust out the tin. And I mean, we went super spoiler, crazy theory stuff.
Yeah, we're talking full spoilers, like
complete
everything.
Spoiler. So, you know at your own risk. But yeah, we had to double down on that Damon Weirwood stuff because it might be like the key to everything. I mean, like everything, to be entirely honest. It could be like one of the most important things that ever happens in A Song of Ice and Fire, especially the show verse that they're building out. I mean, it was insane. I mean, it was like a whirlwind over there.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it was. And it felt good. The three amigos just shooting the breeze. I mean, maybe we'll have to see the feedback, but I know for us, it was a lot.
It was great. It was awesome.
Oh yeah, dude, I honestly think you like anybody who is coming in is really into the lore and wants to freaking know some stuff. You guys are just wants to hear somebody speculate about. That was the best round table freaking discussion, dude. Where we just went nuts. There was Weirwood left and right. There was 10 connections to Game of Thrones. It was
possibly a snow show. I mean,
Daenerys. Guys, Matt literally pulled out a Weirwood freaking bow and almost just like, I mean, it's like, what kind of connection is that, dude? Like, that was deep.
I heard Weirwood bows can kill dragons.
I hear they can kill dragons,
That's what people think.
God. By the way, real quick on that note, Craig and Stark, you know, the intro to this show, when you see the intro and you see they're kneeling to Aegon the Conqueror, he doesn't seem like he quite knelt. He doesn't seem like he knelt all the way. He doesn't seem like he bent the knee all the way. Yeah. And it might have been
mayhaps.
So I just want to point that out because it's like, dude, I don't know, man. The North is pretty strong. So, you know,
it could be arthritis.
It could have been.
Yeah. Woo. All right. Hey, well, real quick, Ez, because, you know, what did you think of this week's episode, man?
Dude, I think. I heard you guys' reaction, and dude, I was with Matt. It's sad, dude. That was sad. Because Rhaenys, the queen that's passed over and everything. I mean, I love her, and she had a lot of emotion going on with Corlys and his bastards and all that kind of stuff, or whatever is happening there. And it's like that just seemed crazy to me. I have no idea. I knew, I guess, as a book reader that was going to happen, but it was just sad to see, dude. And she's strapped up and said, I'm gonna turn back around and I'm finishing this. So
stood her ground.
That was epic, dude. And I just keep going back to, like, you want to see some just badass awesome baller women go at it and just go do that. This is the freaking show, dude. Like, it is on another level. So that was pretty wild. I think the craziest bit from, you know, like, the dragons are awesome, overpowering, cinematic. I think, Jimmy, you said something to the effect of it's like this dance of dragons in the sky, but then, like, on the ground, it's sort of like when they come down, it's just freaking chaos, dude. It's just like they're just stomping on people, and you're like, ooh, this is actually not so pretty as we think. The dance of dragons sounds pretty, but it's not too pretty when they come on the ground and blood is dripping out of their, innards
dancing
onto people.
On peasants. Yeah.
Right.
No good.
Right. But I think, like, Matt would know this for, just from our past together, like, the idea, anything mystical, dude, this mystical stuff with Alice Rivers and stuff is insane. It is absolutely insane. Mm-hmm. So that for me was the most exciting bit, and just trying to go back and make connections to what's happening in the previous episodes and what we're seeing, who is she and where is she connected to, which families and all that stuff was fascinating for me. I loved it. I freaking loved it. I thought it was a great episode, and there's not been an episode that I really haven't enjoyed. You know, there's been some better than others, but in general, it's another knockout season. So,
yeah. I mean, this episode has been ranked as high as, like, I've seen, like, 9.7 on IMDb and some of these other places, which puts it up there with, like, I mean, there's a couple episodes. It's inside the top 10, but that's just Game of Thrones. That's like three episodes that are like 9.9. But so, you know, if you're looking at ranking, if you consider the ties, it's ranked as the fifth highest episode of Game of Thrones, like, of all.
It's dropped to 9.6, but it has 36,000 votes on IMDb, which is actually equivalent to season one, because people are talking about like not as many people are watching or stuff. But apparently all those people showed back up for this episode, which makes me wonder, do you think there's people out there that like just watch random episodes of shows? Like maybe do those people exist? Because that's a really weird thing.
There might be. There might be. Yeah.
Or maybe people feel like coming forward about like, you know what I mean? Like they're like, that was just amazing. I got to go online and like.
I mean, I'll say this on our YouTube poll. We've been getting around for episodes 1 through 3. We've been getting around 700 to 1,000 votes. Mm-hmm. All right. Because we as soon as the episode drops, we say, how would you rate this episode? Right. And most of them have been 4 out of 5 stars or whatever. Right. This last episode, 6,200 votes. So like huge jump. I mean, like insane jump. Whoa. And it's 83%. Yeah. So I mean, people are absolutely loving it. And honestly, I mean, shout out to Eve Best, man. I mean, giving us Princess Rhaenys, taking a character that sounds pretty cool in the books and turning into an absolute boss. I mean, both with the Dragon Pit and this episode, like turning back. Mm-hmm. You know, because the quote in the book is like, you know. She gets her whip out and turns back, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? No, you know. Mm-hmm.
10 toes down.
Yeah, man. Yep.
It just goes full bore with it, right? And with like no hesitation, does it. So shout out. And I always quote, by the way, Jimmy always uses his wife. I always use my mom as like the casual viewer who gives us their like, you know, the people who aren't like us, who go super deep. I always just love to bring her quotes up. Because you know, last week it was like she sent me like one text as she's watching the episode. She's like, "I hate Kristen Cole." This week, this week it was like, "I hope Cole dies and Eamon too."
She's just adding people to her list, like Arya.
When I was talking to, because I always call her and we talk about the episode, you know, and we never go super deep into the stuff, but she always told me, and she said, you know, one of the, I guess something that actually made a lot of sense to me, I didn't really think about. Was she said, you know, like Rhaenys was her favorite character because, you know, my mom's in her like, you know, late 60s. And so she's like, you know, there's not a lot of characters like that that are heroes on TV, right? It's always like young people. And so she's like, no. So like her and her friends at work are watching it and they're talking about it. And they all said that she was their favorite character even before last week because she's cool and she's got a dragon. She's like, you know, their age. I mean, she's younger, you know, because of the way Westeros works, but like an older gray haired woman as like, you know, their like favorite sort of character. Like, and so that's who they related to. And it's like, you don't really think about like the older demographic and like older sort of heroes on TV. So that's who they said they all liked the most. So they were all like super sad.
You know, the Song of Ice and Fire actually does pretty well with like an older generation of lady. Like Olenna Tyrell is literally one of the best characters in the main series.
And even Tywin Lannister. I mean, super powerful.
Tywin.
I mean, presence. Yeah.
Catelyn. Right. I know Catelyn is polarizing because of who she is and how she treats Jon Snow. But like still a great character.
Yeah, even older women, too, specifically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, specifically older women, I just think are very, very well done. I've always said that, like, I would like to know more about George R. R. Martin and his mom's relationship, because I feel like he really wrote motherhood into the series on purpose. Mm-hmm. But the show took Rhaenys and made her better. And that is one of the biggest praises. You know, we're going to go into a little bit of like Gurm. I feel like Gurm has some grievances with the show, but I also think that people are overlooking how much he has praised the show, specifically when it comes to the characters and the performances from the actors and actresses, like Helena Targaryen, obviously Viserys from season one. I wouldn't even say Kristen Cole. Kristen Cole is a far better character here, you know, than in the books. And part of that's the nature of the book being a historical text. But, you know, they could have fallen flat on their faces trying to expand these characters. But I think that they've done a pretty knock up job.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's dive in. Let's dive into what Gurm said, because there's a lot.
I got it all up here. If you want.
You got it. Yeah, if you want to share it, go right ahead. Yeah.
So there's a sequencing of this I'm going to go into. So the first thing that we need to talk about, because we have become one of the Winds of Winter thing people, right? Like we are looking for clues. And I've always said that being hopeful costs me nothing. And there's no reason not to be hopeful, right? Like it doesn't do any good to be negative. However, However, Gurm kind of put a big old bucket of water on the fire that's been going on recently. And he basically said he's meeting with his publishers because he's going to London. And what he wanted to say was, let me say a few words about that, though. Last year, when I mentioned seeing my Voyager edition, our editors, I'm sorry, in London, the internet went nuts, throwing up all sorts of theories about how it meant that the Winds of Winter was done and huge announcements were at hand. Sorry, guys, but no. And then he goes on to explain that basically he meets with his publishers because they're his friends. Like, he's been working with them for decades. And if he were to go to India or anywhere, he would meet with his publishers in that region because it means a lot to him. And he tries to have good face. That's just how business is done for him. Mm-hmm. So he says it doesn't signify anything, actually, except a desire to touch base, catch up, renew old contacts or make some new ones and enjoy a nice meal. So calm down, please. When Winds of Winter is done, the word will not trickle out. There will be a big announcement, and where and when I cannot say. Now, obviously this kind of sucks, right? Because there's been a lot of speculation about it coming out. I think he's writing. I will say this, but here's the thing that I do find interesting about this post, and I'm not going to go on his big hopium rant or anything, but back in the day, I don't know if you guys remember this, an older blog post, he said, when Winds of Winter's done, there will be a blog post on this website that will say, I am done. Like, he will announce it on his blog. He always used to say those words, but in this, he says it will be a big announcement where and when I cannot say. So now he's saying he's not saying it. He's not guaranteeing it's going to be on the blog, which I thought was interesting because that's always been his consistent messaging. And also, not knowing where it will be, a lot of people thought Worldcon this year was going to be the big when they announced the Hugo and stuff that Gurm's going to announce. But it turns out that apparently Worldcon wouldn't give George like a panel or time on the stage. They ignored him. And he's going as a fan, essentially. Like, he's buying a ticket, I think. And
I'll tell you, yeah.
No expo, nothing. And I think the last person to run Worldcon has passed away, and that was his friend or something along. I mean, I might be wrong about this. But essentially, he reached out three different occasions, and he documents in the blog post. You can tell he's, like, kind of pissed. He's like, yeah, I guess, you know, screw me. I guess they don't want me there. so that was interesting just in its own. But maybe he was planning on doing something at Worldcon, because now it's like where, when, and when I do not know. I thought that was just kind of interesting. But I mean, I will say this, he's telling us point blank, and we have to believe him at his word. Him meeting with the publishers was not a signal of anything. So,
well, I think it was a signal of something, and I can pull it up. I think what he was referring to is the fact that, and this is why I'm actually super hyped. But yeah, there's the new editions. First of all, the artwork looks sick.
Love it.
Yeah. Okay. But here's where I like to get the hype train rolling.
Come
okay,
on.
Jimmy.
I think I might let know where get, you're going. Can
let
I guess?
Get the hype train going on? Okay. I got a couple things to say here. Right.
Okay.
One, he said, "Hey, I can't go to London to be on the writer be go to the writer's room." Which, by the way, he could still zoom in to the writer's room.
Yeah, I got a whole breakdown for it.
Yeah, you don't have to actually, whatever. You can zoom in. It's easy. We have technology these days. I mean, I know he likes to go to Cabin in the Woods and do his thing, but why would you, which by the way, let me pull these back up. I think they look freaking sick. I love the artwork for this, right?
Yeah, I'll be buying them like an idiot because I already
own them. I will too, because I actually don't even own a physical set. So, but I need one. So
I have six copies of Game of Thrones, so that'll be my seventh. I have a problem.
But if you're making all this new artwork, right? Because maybe the cover that you've chosen, remember last year, there was a cover was released that was like a mock-up cover, but it was by someone who has done artwork for George in the past, like on the calendars or something. I can't remember where exactly he's worked for, but he's done official artwork, and everybody thought, ooh, this is going to be the cover, and it's like the dragon glass spear tip, right? So, because for the longest time, everybody's used a cover, which is not a real cover, by the way, of the horn. Mm-hmm. That's it's just, it looks like those covers we've seen for years, yeah. Right? With the dagger and the crown and stuff. But the fact that there's these new covers to me indicates, hey, maybe I've chosen a cover for the Winds of Winter and it looks in this art style and that's the cover I want to go for. So we should release versions of all of the books that look like they go with these covers, right? Okay. And now you're saying that he is saying, I said for years, I'm going to do it on my blog post saying it's done. But now he's saying, maybe I'm not going to do my blog post. Maybe I'm going to do it somewhere else. And he thought it was going to be Worldcon, and now it's not. I got a great place to tell you to do it. How about at the freaking Emmys? When House of the Dragon wins best series, George goes up and is like, oh yeah, by the way.
Oh my it's God. Done. That would be,
did you get bigger than that?
That would actually be insane.
I mean, let's just go ahead and say it. The show that I thought was going to challenge Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon for best drama was going to be The Bear, but I don't know. I just finished it. I don't think it's going to win it this year. The Bear, a lot of people are kind of down on The Bear this year for what would potentially be like best drama. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I haven't watched anything else that I think is going to even come close to challenging House of the Dragon this year.
All right, yeah. Matt, if you want me to give you guys some hopium, I'll give you some hopium. So, you
know, inject it.
Listen,
I'm just get it.
Open. I'm gonna get the veins, belt out
because Jimmy's got some free drugs coming right to the veins here.
Okay. Juice.
The cream rises to the top. Oh yeah. All right. So check us out. The last time they released a box set of Game of Thrones or Song of Ice and Fire was 2011, and there was only four books in it. And then directly following that, A Dance of Dragons came out with the same kind of cover type, and then they slammed it into the box set. So all I'm saying is the last time we saw a box set release,
yeah,
it was imminent that a new one was coming. I don't listen.
That's likely. I think it's
freaking likely.
That's likely. Come on. What are you going to do? Say, oh, yeah, I'm dropping my new book and I'm going to go ahead and use the same cover from what? Oh, let's remind people 13 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, instead, yeah, let's go ahead and like forget it was 13 years and let's go ahead and, you know, make right, some new
covers. Because a lot of the covers people have been buying, by the way, have been the newer Game of Thrones covers. The covers that Ryan did in the book, say like HBO, and it's got like there's like the Dance of Dragons is no longer like the silver with like the coin. It's it's like Tyrion and like, you know, standing on the boat, right? It's more of the Game of Thrones one. Like the Game of that's the Dance of Dragons, but it ties into the show Game of Thrones. And then I think the actual Game of Thrones book is like the White Walker's face, isn't it?
Something like that. I can't
something like that. Remember. Yeah, like, but those are the Game of Thrones version cover books. At least what we get here in North America is because the rest of the world is different.
Yeah. So one of the things, you know, that kind of makes people feel good about this is that George is being absurdly active on his blog. Like, we haven't seen him write this much in a multiple posts in a week.
Like, yeah, sometimes it's like we get one a month.
Yeah, or sometimes it's a couple months. You know, he went through that really bad depressive episode in January. We were all kind of like worried about him. But even whenever Game of Thrones, I went back and looked, he wasn't posting this much. Like, it is actually crazy how much he's posting. In that posting, and this will all transition to some of the people are wondering how George feels about the show. Now, I want to preface this with he's given a ton of praise. I think he enjoys House of the Dragon. But like anyone, he's going to have likes and dislikes. And I think as the creator of this thing, I think maybe he feels certain ways whenever he sees things changed. So this is going back into July 5th of the Blood and Cheese post. He said, hey, you know, a lot of people who watched the show only thought it was crazy. Book readers may feel differently. And then he said, well, there's a lot to be said about that, but this is not the place for me to say it. The issues are too complicated. Somewhere down the line, I will do a separate post about all the issues raised by Blood and Cheese and Maelor the Missing. There's a lot to say. And people are saying that he's kind of upset with the Helaena choice change. And I will say this. I do think it has kind of a pessimistic tone to it, but maybe I'm reading that in. And then following up, Matt kind of alluded to this earlier. George actually put in his recent blog where he's talking about where all the places he's going. He said the writer's room for House of the Dragon season 3 is also meeting in London, but I have no plans to attend. Now, before I get too negative, I just want to say they might be meeting for dinner. They might be meeting to go over things. We know for a fact that the writers sat down for season 2 and 3 and he was there whenever they were doing the initial writings of like planning things out, how it's going to go, like the timelines and stuff.
Yeah.
So he has done work on season 3. This might simply be like a revision meeting or something, or it could be anything.
Right.
The only thing that's a little bit weird about this, and I want to see what you guys feel, like, why did he mention it then? Mm-hmm. Like, does it not kind of give off the thing like he wanted us to know he's not attending? Like, maybe he's a little bit displeased?
Yeah. Here's the thing. The fact that he mentioned that he was upset about a Maelor choice, right?
Maelor, the Missing. Yeah, the extra Missing. Son.
Yeah, well, first of all, go check out the Patreon episode where we talk about why that could be actually super significant. And that might be why, because there may be things that he planned on doing with these minor characters that he's going to reveal in these other books. Like, people forget that some of this lore, all of this lore trickles into his final two books. And he has the knowledge of thinking, well, this is not going to make sense. And he's really thinking at it from this lens of, I'm a writer, I've got to finish this series, and it'd be cool to kind of see this here, and it would make this connection. He may know that something is significant and may not. I wonder if he, I mean, you would imagine he would tell them why that would be significant, you know, why I need that character in there. But I feel like that might have been some of the frustration with, he only gave bits and pieces. He felt very troubled that he had to give up hope, not troubled, but he had to give up Hodor. The Hodor moment he had to give up to the show before he could reveal it in the book, right? And I feel like he's lost a few of those things that he can reveal. And so maybe he didn't, he said, look, this just needs to be there. Why, George? Well, I can't tell you why. I'm not going to tell you why, because it's going to steal thunder from my book. But I don't know. I mean, it just, that is odd that he went ahead and said that, though, that he went ahead and said, hey, I'm not going to be there.
It's because he says he wants to be in London. He's going to be in London because they want to go see a place where the Iron Throne, right, which is the play there, right, the Harrenhal thing they're leading to. By the way, he does end this by saying the dream, right, which dream is interesting, it's a dream of spring, is to open somewhere on London's West End in 2025, but there's still a lot of work to do, which is what he always says when he's talking about Winds of Winter. Now, if you were to open a play, wouldn't you be on a stage?
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I'm just saying, announce it.
We're in Mayday mode over here.
We're cooked. We're so cooked. Jeez.
Dude, Jimmy, I'm so cooked. Like when you said, he said, you know, the when and the where, I was like, winds of winter.
Oh, no.
You know, I was freaking out. I was like, oh, shoot. Is he coding a message in this thing? When and where? Winds of winter? You know.
Well, he did do a couple of wows in a row with winky faces and a blue rose. God. And it's like, you know what, George? If you don't want us to speculate online, don't do this stuff. You know, come on. You gotta be. He didn't dispel any of that, by the way. He only dispelled the publishers. So
exactly
there. We don't have.
Yeah, okay.
Not all hope is gone. It's not forlorn. But the one thing that makes this interesting is that, like, I think it's pretty clear he's a little upset with Blood and Cheese and maybe Maelor being gone. And then he says he's not attending the writer's room. And then today he makes this big post about dragons. And actually, if you're a fantasy fan, you need to go read this. It is really interesting to see into the mind of one of the most prominent authors of all time in the genre. He has tons of references to other works, obviously Lord of the Rings being the main one. And he's talking about canon. And he's saying that, you know, his dragons do these specific things. He got very upset because at the late stages of Game of Thrones television show, they actually changed the Targaryen symbol to four-legged dragons instead of two. And in House of the Dragon, he is saying that they decided to use the four-legged dragons instead of the two-legged dragons. And this obviously has pissed him off a little bit. Like, he is not pleased. I think it's kind of silly. Like, I don't think it's that big of a deal. But, like, he seems upset by it. And he goes on to talk about, like, the roaming dragons in the world. And it's kind of saying, you know, maybe some of the wandering dragons or the nomadic dragons in the show are not exactly how he wrote the dragons to be. And at the end of it all, he kind of explains what his dragons would do. And they wouldn't just be randomly flying without riders. And they wouldn't be just like walking around the Stormlands. And he says, fantasy needs to be grounded. It is not simply a license to do anything you like. Smaugh and Toothless, Dragon's Mother series, may both be dragons, but they should never be confused. Ignore canon and the world you've created comes apart like tissue paper. And, I don't know. This feels, and you remember this, Matt, a couple blog posts back, this is a while back now, but he was talking about how like adaptations are never as good as the books. And it's because they mess with the canon and stuff. And like, we all thought he was talking about season 8 and a lot of the stuff that's happened with other adaptations of people he loved, like Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time. And obviously Tolkien and the Rings of Power, whatever. Is there a chance that he was also talking about House of the Dragon there? Like, I don't think we can rule it out. Now, with that said, again, he has praised the show endlessly as well. But I think that there's some clear.
He even praises the tension. Show at the beginning of this blog post.
He does. And I think I think he has a ton of respect for the actors, the right, like all the people who go in and do this work and make this, you know, this world come alive. I think he has a ton of respect for that because he worked in television. But I feel like creatively, he might be a little bit pissed off with them changing lore things. And I think you're right. I think it has to do with him saying, well, I was setting this up and this up. And now, you know, the books are going to contradict this or maybe Dunk and Egg Show. We were planning on doing this and now we can't do it. Or maybe he had an idea for Robert's Rebellion or whatever else, you know. Well, but there seems to be tension.
Yeah, it looks like in that post you're just referencing, I pulled it up here. It says, you know, like, my dragons do not talk. They're relatively intelligent, but they're still beasts. And you go, right, here's an important line. They bond with men, some men, and why and how. So the why and the how of that is, and that will be eventually coming out in more details in Winds of Winter and A Dream of Spring. So,
and that is the biggest thing about this post, because he has said the dragon bond in Fire and Blood, the Maesters say anyone who claims to know how a dragon's bond works is a fool. And we've always used that as a way of like saying, guys, you know, this isn't something we need to worry about. But George is telling you right here that it matters, and he's going to explain it. Yeah. He's going to explain how it works. And he also hints that the Maester may not have.
Does that mean John's going to ride a dragon in Winds of Winter or Dream of Spring?
I think it might, or Tyrion, because remember, Tyrion has the dream of riding a dragon and burning Castle Rock. And we've all said that, like, well, how does Tyrion get on a dragon if he's not a secret Targaryen? Because we don't really buy into that. But this is saying that the bond is going to be explained. And now maybe there's a chance that the show is messing with that. And that might be what he's specifically
taking him off.
I think it's cool. You know what? Here's the thing. We don't know what Tolkien
about
adaptations. Yes. You know, we get to actually see how George feels about his. I think that that's even true. If it's dissenting, I think it's still important to take it in. And we can have our own opinions. You know, we can still love the show. And I think he also still loves the show. I think he just has some things.
He wants to clarify. Yeah, he wants
a little bit annoyed.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I do, however, also want to bring up the fact that he he does drop the hammer a little bit on the very, very small percentage of people who I just love to drop the hammer on too. They're not dragons. They're wyvern. No one cares. Okay. No one cares. Okay. Cause you always get those comments sometimes, and it's like 1% of people who are actually like, no one cares. The average viewer who watches this, of the millions of people, do not care about the difference between a dragon and a wyvern. Also, if they want to call it a dragon, that's what, if that thing showed up, right, in our world right now, people would say there's a freaking dragon.
Yeah.
They would not say, that's a wyvern. No, it's just because also just real quick, if I were to create my own universe and I want to call them dragons in it, I can't. Like, that's you can create however you want. Right.
Yep.
Zombies are not exclusively that there's zombies in this type of thing and zombies in this. I mean, they can all be different.
That's wild.
Get them, Matt.
I always see those comments and I always just roll my eyes and I'm just like, dude, no one cares. Yeah. But yes, he does get that. Dragons do exist in the world of Westeros, right? Wyverns too, down in so he says that he actually even has wyverns. So they must be different than these dragons.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And maybe that's why he's mad about the two.
For the people who are like, what the hell is a wyvern? People say that dragons with two legs are a wyvern, and a real dragon has four legs, right?
Well, George doesn't like the four-legged dragons, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
He was displeased with that banner.
All I know is dragons show up in our real life in all the histories.
That's true. Because they're freaking real, okay?
It costs me nothing to believe, so I will also say I too believe the dragons.
I avoided putting the tinfoil hat on there and explaining why dragons actually exist in our real life. So, sorry.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to try to pull up a thing here about it too, but I wanted to bring up a little thing that's kind of rubbing me the wrong way and caused me to have a little bit of nervousness for...
It's a big episode. Connect. My goodness.
It's a big episode. Well, we also recorded a Patreon thing and we recorded it all at once, so I can cut it up later. But we're like an hour in. I know it's like some people are like,
I'm having fun. You haven't
gone? We're just rolling here. So, okay. So, HBO, Warner Brothers, whatever, have decided that apparently some of the shows that are going to be coming out, they're no longer like HBO Max shows, and that they will show up on HBO and show up on Max. And the big one is The Penguin, which is coming out, and it is like a side piece to The Batman, the Robert Pattinson Batman. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trailer looks awesome. I'm super excited for it. But it seems like they're going to be doing this there's another show too. I'll see if I can pull up what the other show is, but they're doing that. It sounds like they're going to be doing that more, where they want a show to air on HBO, like TV, and then later come to Max, not released simultaneously. So and so, yeah, it's totally stupid.
Here's the thing. Then just put it on HBO. Like I don't know.
Why would they do that? Yeah, what's the point?
It's more confusing. Like, they went from HBO Max to Max, which no one thinks that's a better name. Like, nobody thinks it's a better name. And now saying it's a Max.
And Dune Prophecy is the other show.
I mean,
yeah, so Max Originals. I'll pull this let me pull this up here. Max Originals, The Penguin, and Dune Prophecy moving to HBO. Because Warner Brothers Discovery is shifting three of its highest profile Max Originals, and they want to become HBO Originals for whatever freaking reason. So these are all big things, right? Like Harry Potter, right? The Welcome to Derry is going to do the same thing. It's going to be you have to watch it on HBO first, like weekly. It's not going to be on Max where you can just stream it. Yeah, and totally stupid. I think it's.
Well,
yeah, I'm with you. This is freaking dumb. What the heck?
From a marketing standpoint, I think this is bad because, like, we will know, and we have HBO or whatever, but, like, you have to worry about the general audience because those are the people who pay the bills. Those are the people that keep shows alive. So it just they're always shooting themselves in the foot with their marketing. However, there could be a plus side to this. It could be that they want HBO to have exclusive control over these things, because I don't know if you guys have been on Max and watched anything non-HBO, but it's not good. So I feel like they may want to continue to have that HBO exclusivity of the high premium television shows.
Okay.
So that could be it. It could just be a branding thing. And I get that, but you cannot keep switching these things every year. It's so dumb, and you're upping your prices every year. Like, it's just, I don't know. I get really frustrated.
Well, the problem I look at is, so House of the Dragon, right? When House of the Dragon, the numbers were down for season two premiere, 22% total. But that includes the people who watched on HBO and the people who watched on Max, so the numbers were up for House of the Dragon season one. However, there's a big difference between House of the Dragon season one and House of the Dragon season two with the economy. All streaming prices have gone through the roof over those past 2 years. I used to carry all of them. A lot of people only carry like one or two now. I rotate. I mean, I always have Max, and then I rotate. Like right now I have Peacock because I'm watching the director's cut versions of The Office. And then we're like in the final season of that, so I'm going to drop it because I want to go get Netflix, because, you know, there's like some Netflix shows I want to watch. But it's just like, I don't want to spend like $80 a year, $80 a month, excuse me, a year, $80 a month for like two streaming services. So a lot of people aren't going to do it. So, but the numbers, by the way, for House of the Dragon were down as a total, but Max had its best day ever. So clearly people want to watch it on Max. Like, it clearly the thing was like the people who weren't watching as much, or the people who actually who watched it on HBO, like the Dish or satellite or whatever cable channel. So why would you put something on HBO and then not have it go to your streaming service when it's obvious that there's more people wanting the streaming service?
Yeah,
those old ties to cable, man. They don't want to let it go. They don't want to let that money go.
The old guys. It's the old guys. They won't let her go. Jeez.
Yeah, I can see them maybe wanting to separate HBO out to like an add-on exclusive. You know what I mean? Like, they'll say, no, this is actually just Max, and now to HBO, you're gonna have to pay the extra $10 or whatever. Like, I don't know. I don't know, but I don't love how they keep.
I'll tell you this. Like, for starters, if Dunkin' Egg comes out and it's only on HBO, I might not watch it. Okay. And I mean, like,
that's ridiculous. you literally have to.
But I don't want to pay for it. And it's tax deductible for me. And I don't want to pay it.
Yeah.
Deductible.
I mean,
that's absurd.
It is tax deductible, dude. I mean, that's how it works.
But that sucks. It affects viewership and all the different things. You're trying to build your subscribers, you know? It's the same thing. It'd be like, dude, Matt,
but I think they're gonna. They might do it. I think they might do it for, if they're already doing it. I mean, look, like the other shows they're doing it for are big shows. I mean, Dune Prophecy, Harry Potter, the Batman thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
what's the point of having the streaming service?
I know. What would I watch on there? I mean, I literally get it for this, for the everything you just mentioned was like, that's why I have it. So I don't know what
we'll
else
see. They could also reverse course. I mean, that is
especially, you know, so, yeah, thankfully those other shows might tank, which sucks. Cause the shows will be good, but the viewership might drop. And then, cause you know, I mean, the Batman looks awesome. The Batman or the Penguin, the Batman spinoff looks awesome. Dune Prophecy, I mean, looks cool. Right. I love Dune too. But, I mean, if it's anything like that.
How stupid though, because then they get in these meetings where they're like, they're trying to analyze the numbers and they're like, well, the numbers weren't good on this show. And it's just like, well, that's because you idiots had people jumping around.
Well, like so that Harry Potter show is going to be massive.
Yeah,
like stupid. That Harry Potter show is going to be insane. Like the numbers will be insane. I think that's their hope, is like maybe it's more profitable for them to have it on HBO, the channel. Jeez. And they'll be like, well, then people will have to go get it. But most people will just wait.
Yeah, I exactly. I'm some because it eventually will come over, right? If you want to watch it,
yeah,
you would just wait and say. I mean, people do that on Netflix all the time. Just like I'm gonna wait till everything comes out, or on Disney Plus, like people just wait till something comes out and then buy it for 1 month, binge it, and then bounce. You know, yeah. So
yeah, it just seems stupid. Silly. Yeah, I mean, maybe with you, Jimmy, where it's like, no, HBO is like, no, this is an HBO thing, and like that gives them.
It could also affect awards somehow. I don't know how that works. If there's restrictions about how many things could be nominated from like certain networks or something. I don't know. I feel like,
I don't know. And the Emmys, like pretty much just like HBO is nominated for everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, whew, all right. Hey, that was the news. Let's dive into some Ravens here. By the way, we got a lot of Ravens here, but it's hard to see because we had so many people sign up for Patreon. It's all buried in with all the Patreon people. So by the way, appreciate that. I want to keep that going here. So we'll get these pulled up here. Oh, first one, I sent this one to Jimmy. This is from Joe. Sir Joe says, I've heard Jimmy say flush out a few times recently. I'm pretty sure he's meaning flesh out.
Dude, that's me. That's
love I used to the show. Thanks. What yeah, the heck?
My bad. I have dyslexia and I have had so many concussions that I mess up stuff all the time. So no, sorry.
It's let's it's, flush it out. Hey, let's flush this flush, out, boys.
I got CTE. Right. I can't.
All right. Here we go. Hey, we got another one. Hey, boom. And this guy shouts out Sir Ezra in this one too. So it's great.
Let's go.
This is from Sir Nicholas, who says, hey guys, my name is Nicholas from Oklahoma. Been a long time listener since 2020, but I haven't sent in a Raven yet. I wanted to get caught up in the reread and shout out to Sir Ezra in addition to you two as well. Oh, hey, Sir Ezra's here today, so this works perfectly.
Yeah, thank you.
So I've been thinking about the line of succession of Targaryens, especially with episode 4 of House of the Dragon, which was awesome, by the way. Do you think it's possible that Ned Stark has read Targaryen history, saw the tumultuous line of succession, and decided to say that, you know, according to the show, Lyanna and Rhaegar's baby was his, like that may have been another reason. As like he was familiar with perhaps the Dance of the Dragons, and that's why he kept Jon Snow. It was like more, he looked like also factor. At the line of six. Yeah, it's a factor. Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, like the idea that like you're reading about it and knowing how crazy people would go over a Targaryen king. I mean, we already speculate in the main series that's a big issue anyways, because they all just got freaking, Robert's going, forget the rebellion's real. It's on fire. But yeah, I don't think there's any reasoning with Robert during that time. And then also could be that you look back and you see some of the craziness surrounding a dragon. I wonder if he even means too that might be the fear of putting a Targaryen back on the throne or something, just that like, maybe it's better if the realm does move away from this Targaryen dynasty, perhaps, or something.
Yeah, and the big thing is like we see how he reacts to finding out Daenerys is alive. He wants to murder her.
Yeah, true.
And if Jon were to be even half Targaryen, I think Robert would try to seize Winterfell. I think he would lose his mind to know that Ned
Eddard Stark would lay him low, buddy. Let me tell you right now.
Yeah, let's go.
Oh, jeez, don't you even think about it. But you're right. That Robert goes a little crazy, dude.
Yeah, I think that alone is enough to know. Like, I don't, and maybe it actually doesn't even have enough to do with the history, but just the fact that like the climate for a Targaryen popping up would almost mean certain death. But I will say, I do think that Ned Stark knows all about the dance, because that is some of the most shaping times in Westeros history. The Maesters have written extensively about it, so it would it would shock me if he didn't know about the dance. I mean, we even hear Joffrey, you know, in the show, and at some point in the book, it's also mentioned about, you know, what happens in the dance, which we won't say for spoiler purposes, but you know, this was in the mind of George as he wrote the main series, and it's in the characters' minds as well. So it seems to be very well-known history.
Yeah, I like the idea of them just, you know, sitting around and growing up as even like a young Eddard Stark and learning about those things and reading about it and stuff, just because it's cool. They're reading about some of these great warriors and heroes and a time of dragons. It even to them seems probably magical and fantastical, yeah. Right? So I like it. It's cool.
Yeah.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Yeah, somebody brought up a question, and now I'm struggling to find exactly who it was that sent it, but asked about Robert's Warhammer and said, why haven't we seen it? And like, what happens to it? And I don't, as far as I looked, and I don't think that there's anything on it. The only thing we know is that what's his name? Who they kept out of the show, Donald Noy.
My man.
Remember? Yeah. Donald Noy up there at the wall. Actually, Tyrion takes some of his role. All we know is he's the guy who made it. Right. And that he is actually one of the men who defends the gate when the free folk, actually. Let's not, Wild Wings is a derogatory.
Yeah, we don't say wild.
Free folk. The free folk, right? We are trying to break through. He's one of the men that holds the gate.
Wow, guys. What has happened here? Are you serious? We don't call them the wildlings.
You know, we hit
that block of chapters where John's up there with a Gret, and we're like, yeah, you know what? These are good people. All right, you know,
free folk. Wildlings is a drug.
It's a derogatory term.
There's
up there. They're free.
That's true.
That's what a Gret says. The Gret says something. She's like, we're free. We don't bend the knee to nobody up here.
Let's go. Respect. Yeah.
That's great. There we go. Hey, this is got this one from a guy named Chris. Says, isn't Meleys the swiftest dragon the world had seen? So after knowing, you know, let's see here. So after the battle, he says, you know, why didn't Rhaenys decide? Why did she not fly back to Dragonstone? Why are they acting like they're unaware of Vhagar's existence power? At least in the books, it's more of a 2-on-1. Said he gave the episode a 4 out of 5 because of the divergence from the books created more holes in the logic, in my opinion. But of course, still loved the episode, loved the podcast. I saw some other people say that. Said, you know, like they're so close, she could have flown back to Dragonstone for more to be like, hey, I need help.
She could have, but there's two things to this, in my opinion. Is Rook's Rest is really important. Like, them getting any boots on the ground starts at Rook's Rest, most likely. Like they are locked in the Dragonstone. Now things are going to happen, and they, you know, the conflict will resume. But that is the idea. It's like, if we lose Rook's Rest, it's a wrap. And remember, she didn't know she was flying into a dragon. She literally thought that it was so close that there was no way they would be able to get word, because no one had used a dragon in warfare at this point. So it was supposed to be almost like a surprise attack in some ways from the Rhaenys perspective. And I think she looked at it and she said, I cannot fly back. I will have failed the queen if I fly back. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to go. Also, she probably had a little bit of arrogance, right? Like, she's probably like, I can trounce, you know, Vhagar's big, but we know that Maelys is very, very battle ready. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it. And another part, and this is me projecting onto this character a little bit probably, but I think Rhaenys was maybe ready to go. I think she talks about the stranger a lot. And she watched her son supposedly die, right, in season one. And she's watching the body of, Corlys's brother being wrapped, you know, and they're like, oh, you don't want to see this. And she's like, no, the stranger comes for everyone. And I think she says it one more time. She's seen a lot of stuff. I almost got the sense that she felt like her time was past. But that is all speculation on my end.
I'll say, too, also, if you go back and you watch it, because I rewatched the scene, she's looking down a lot. Like while she's flying, because she's looking for Aegon. Because if she can get one more pass over Aegon, even if she gets taken out, she's ended the war.
Yeah.
I mean, because she's, I mean, all she needs, she's looking to see like, where did he land? Because if she can even get one more layer of like Dracarys on, or to confirm he's dead, then even if she goes down, like she just ended the whole thing. So, I mean, she was that close to, you know, if she had flown in the other direction, actually, she wouldn't have got attacked by Vhagar, would have come across Aegon, and would have sealed the deal.
Yes. And Maelys also did do damage to Vhagar. Like, let's not pretend. It wasn't a squash match. Like, she got her lips in.
Yeah. So here's a map, by the way. So, yeah. So here's, you got Dragonstone. I mean, right here. Right. And then Rook's Rest is right there. Yeah. I mean, so it is right across the way from them, essentially. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that is, I mean, you'd be hard pressed to fly over that if they've got, you know, the
scorpions and dragons sitting there. Yeah. Like they are land, and that's what they say in the episode, you know, like we'll be locked to Dragonstone. They kind of needed Rook's Rest. Like they really, at least in their mind in the moment, they thought that was like the pinnacle, right? Yeah. So and the greens did too. The greens even said, look, Rook's Rest. Aegon's like, no, we want Harrenhal. And they're like, you don't understand, like we can literally lock them.
Yeah, because Driftmark's right there too, and then you can now you've got them sort of locked into a
shut them out to the sea and everything. Yeah. You know, real quick, just the idea that if she would have flown back, I mean, she would be also bringing, even though they probably could have outnumbered Vhagar, maybe Vhagar's freaking huge. He is she's huge. Like it just do we even know? I don't even know. Vhagar.
She
dragon.
Vhagar's the girl. Yeah.
Is headed there. And like, that would also pull out a lot of her family, you know, to have to come out and attack. And I just thought maybe like what Matt was saying, fly back through, end it. As Jimmy's saying, she's sensing death. She's having sort of a sentimental conversation with her husband there before she leaves. And it's also, she just saw from Rhaenyra the ability or the willingness to go to King's Landing and say, got to find a way to end this, you know? And so she's finally seeing her do that and says, okay, if we can end this quickly, I need to strap in here and go back and end this and be done. Because I don't think she expected to see Sunfire. And
no,
King Aegon, right? That was
when she sees Sunfire, it's almost like she's like, oh, here we go.
It's like, time. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And you know what? As that's a phenomenal point, though, she sees the example set by the queen that she never got to be.
Yeah.
And because they said, you're so stupid, you could have died in King's Landing. She's like, I would die for peace. Like I would die to keep Viserys' vision. And then 90 years that came before that, you know, and that is probably the same logic Rhaenys had in her head. I don't really have a problem with her standing and fighting. There's such thing as fight or flight also. I mean, that is a real thing.
Right.
I don't know if you guys have ever watched like horrific videos of bad things happening to people, but some people, they stand their ground and they usually die, unfortunately.
Yeah, so now that we've seen it a little bit more in the books, it says that essentially she's the one who turns back, and in the battle, she's the one who actually injures Aegon. Like she's the one who burns him. So in the way it's described in the books, it makes her death feel even more important. I mean, she does injure Sunfire and stuff like that, which ultimately, but it's Aemond, who burns Aegon. So, which does add another air element, and we've talked, Jimmy and I have talked about this too, is I feel like every time they're like, hey, we can play with something, they do it to give more story to the greens, since the greens don't have as much, like the story's much more Rhaenyra Daemon focused in the books. So yeah, I mean, now that we've seen it, but now that we've seen it again, do you think, I mean, her ending still feels so heroic. Important that I've thought about it more, because at first I was like, oh, I don't know if I like that, you know.
She's mid-fight. She's like mid-fight there, and she's actually actively trying to take him out, and then Vhagar is like a surprise attack out of nowhere. That was the big change, the decision to lay low and watch this happen and take advantage of his vulnerable brother, which I know you guys talked about that, which is crazy. I mean, actually just kind of wild and twisted. And like I said, it sort of shows this parallel between him and Daemon, and how he emulates and wants to be like Daemon, but he's, I mean, to another level here, actually gonna try and take the opportunity.
Yeah.
Was he going to end him there, by the way, at the end with the sword?
Again,
yeah, he pointed that dagger at him.
I was
like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then I asked this to Matt, I don't know if you heard this, as I said, if that blade had been warmed up by some of that dragon fire, was Aemon able to read the Valyrian on the blade?
Might change.
Showcased his
Valyrian. Right. That's huge.
That might change him. Yeah, no, that would be freaking nuts.
Very interesting. I will say, I love the word that you use there, as you use the word vulnerable. Aegon was vulnerable, but you know what was it vulnerable in episode 3? When Aemon was laying in the fetal position with a hooker.
Yep.
And his brother comes in and makes a mockery of him.
Yeah.
And he stands, you know, he's showing shaft. You know, he embarrass me. And I'm just saying, that's very interesting. Is it not? Like, I think that's
seed is strong.
Yeah, this is this is why they made that change. The emotional investment, Rhaenys is there, yes, but the emotional investment in the long term is between Aemon and Aegon, and I think that it actually does better for a television viewer, like not a book person, but like a television viewer, to have that moment given to Aemon.
Well, like, come on, what you guys have been talking about with the greens, in terms of them not having a lot of, you know, story and making them feel more relatable, more interesting. Like, I know we're supposed to, you know, most people are team black. But I mean, I'm sitting over here, like when I watched Aegon after his kids were killed and everything, and just the way how he was raised and all the things that he kind of went through, and just he doesn't want it. He's actually more of a dynamic character than I ever thought he would be. And he's twisted, he's messed up and everything, but you kind of start to feel for him a little bit, and then you don't. Then the next episode, you're like, he's a jerk,
you know?
And you're like, this guy's an idiot, take him out. I don't know, man. It's they've done a lot more stuff with the greens that I really freaking like. I'm still team Allison Hightower, dude. That's my queen, dude. I love her. Defeat that or promise, baby. I just
here's another good one. We're gonna shift gears here and talk a little bit more about Alice Rivers, who we just did a big Patreon episode on.
Yeah,
by the way. Who? But I mean, I should have included this in the thing, but I forgot about it. So, but I do have it pulled up here. It says, this is from Aaron saying, "Hey y'all, I love the show. I don't know if you I don't know if you've noticed, but Alice Rivers has never been noticed by any of the other characters. So far, the only person to speak with her is Daemon. And when she's alone with Daemon, all these weird visions of the show, do you think it's possible she is some kind of ghost or hallucination?" And then the segment after the show where they kind of interview like the directors, they do a little bit of detail on it. Ryan Condell even says that in the segment that some of the people believe she has been there for hundreds of years. Hope you all have a great week. I'm excited for Fallout Friday.
She might be a ghost.
A ghost of Harrenhal.
A ghost of Harrenhal.
Or Highheart.
Yeah.
Wow, man.
It's all right there.
Man, wow. I don't know. I mean, I never thought of that, but that is true. I haven't seen anyone else interact with her, I don't think.
Yeah, and she's down there in that kitchen making that like weirwood, whatever it is.
Weirwood paste or something.
And there's nobody there. I mean, I know it's like later or whatever, but you're right, we don't see too
many. The other one is when she sees Daemon by the weirwood tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is crazy. Yeah, there's something definitely super mysterious to that individual. And as Matt said, we did discuss it in a full deep breakdown on Patreon. I would highly encourage you guys to go check it out because I just really can't say much about it right now because
we're not killer stuff.
we can say that we think she has a way bigger role to play than just what's in Fire and Blood and possibly past Fire and Blood.
Yes.
Or I should say past the dance.
Agreed. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Hey, here we go. This one's for as I believe this is from Michael or Mike. He goes by Justice for Team Green. Hey guys, my name is Mike. I'm a longtime listener. I love all your shows. I just want to say your content is a major part of the reason I read the main series after Game of Thrones season 8 ended. Awesome. Well, thank you.
Awesome.
Says, I want to get your all's opinion on what House of the Dragon has changed from Fire and Blood. I want to start off by saying I love the show. I've only read the main series in Dunk and Egg, so I have not read Fire and Blood or anything else related to House of the Dragons. After season 1, a strong Team Green supporter. Although I got the sense that they were going to be portrayed as villains, Aemon was obviously very cool, and I got the feeling after episode 9 they were going to make Aegon a tragic villain. Team Black's character seemed very vanilla and boring to me. Since I was Team Green, and most of my friends are Team Black, I resorted to places like Twitter and Reddit for Team Green discussions to try to avoid spoilers. One major discussion point I've seen on social media is that they are portraying Rhaenyra and Team Black as the good guys and Team Green as the obvious bad guys. A lot of Team Green book readers are mad at the show writers for heavily being biased, and it seems to be even worse after the fight with Aegon and Sunfire. I want to get your all's thoughts, opinion, or your thoughts on the changes. Team Green fans seem to be disappointed in a lot of the changes by removing any good qualities from Team Green or moving the bad qualities of Team Black, while Team Black fans seem to lean heavily into their differing accounts and face in Fire and Blood. I believe George said there are two separate canons, which I agree with, but I still can't help feeling a bit disappointed this season as a Team Green fan and finding out a lot of the book changes. Still love the show, but let me know what you think. And then he has another little thing here saying, I have to admit, finding out after the episode of Sunfire and Aegon's bond seem to be considered special after only getting a three-second clip of their interaction was very disappointing.
Okay. I have so much to say.
You want me to go on? Jimmy! You defending. Let me go ahead and defend my queen. Because here's the thing. Targaryens, when you have these secrets, right? Super secret. So secret that we're not even going to tell our wife, the queen. Okay? That's why things get a little messed up on the deathbed. All right. That's why things get misinterpreted. Okay. So maybe if we weren't so daggone secretive and we allowed people, if you're going to allow her into your bedchamber, then by God, allow her into your confidence a little bit. Okay. Jeezy cow. I mean, she's there to further the Targaryen line. That's part of the mistake right there. Okay. So this wouldn't have happened. None of this would have happened if the Targaryens were a little bit more trustful and Queen Alicent the Good.
Or they could just not be misogynistic. That would also probably So here's the thing. And I hear what you're saying. Also, I think it's amazing that you read the books based on the show and then coming along with this.
Absolutely. Read.
I just wanted to say, like, that's literally my favorite thing in the world when someone tells me that. So that's awesome. What I would say is this. If you were to look at Fire and Blood, and a lot of people feel like Rhaenyra is also supposed to be somewhat of the good person or the good side in Fire and Blood. But if you go look at what her titles were in this book that was written by maesters that are sourced at a Hightower, by the just, you know, Old Town, they call her what? Queen for... what is it? Queen for a summer or something like that. Queen for
Rhaenyra the Cruel.
Yeah, yeah. Rhaenyra the Cruel. The whore on Dragonstone. So we're seeing a different take where that is maybe not as Old Town leaning. Okay. So I think that's worth looking at. But also, I don't think that this show has done a disservice to the Greens unless if you lack empathy, which unfortunately on Twitter and Reddit, you're not going to find people that are taking this into consideration, thinking about it, you know, from all sides. People like to dig in their heels. I mean, that's essentially what this person has done, right? Like, they're saying, I went and I tried to find some Team Green people. You know, we've got to get on our sides and yell at each other, whatever. Right. But if you actually take a look at it and you extend your empathy to some of the characters, I think Alicent's an extremely sympathetic character. Let us not forget that Otto Hightower has put her in this position. And yes, she is responsible for her own actions. But we are seeing a conflict within herself where if you're able to extend your sympathy towards her, I don't think that she's wholly a bad character if you're not invested in sides. I think Aemon, we just explained how Aemon is extremely well-rounded. And yes, he is
being super vulnerable last week.
Very vulnerable.
And then he gets embarrassed by his brother. Yeah.
And we have felt for Aegon, who sexually abused a maid and ruined her life last season. Okay.
Yep. So, I mean, yeah,
yes, they've done bad things, but I think that there is an opportunity there to put ourselves in their shoes and to also understand that human beings are extremely complex people. And that's what the show does very, very well. The other thing, and I'll end on this, is we have to remember we haven't seen the whole show yet. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm not going to go to spoil. There could be a very big shift in characters and how we view
them. There's still a lot to
go. You have to look. I know it's week by week and 2 years between the seasons, but like we have to see the whole picture and we don't have that yet. I think maybe some of that nuance that you're hoping for Rhaenyra will come. I think it already exists for Daemon. I think if anyone looks at Daemon as a good guy, they're out of their minds. I think he's horrible. And I've said this. I think he's evil. But I still like the root form because, you know, it's a television show, so I can do that.
Right.
But there is plenty of nuance, I think, on each side. I will say, I think Rhaenyra's character is a little bit vanilla right now. I don't think that she has as much nuance as some of the other characters. But I think that if we wait, we will get that. Everyone's going to get their time in the sun to mess up. And I think that Rhaenyra's time will come soon enough. So,
yeah, I mean, let's just take Aemond, for example, right? Aemond, I mean, to be fair to this kid, like, gets his eye cut out.
Yes.
And
then
when his mother is trying to defend him, saying, like, I cannot, like, he just lost it. His father's like, well, you know, I mean, what are we supposed to really do about it? I mean, like, the kid just lost his eye. The kid just lost his eye, right? And he's like, well, you know, I don't know. Hey, and if anybody... And the whole deal is that Aegon actually stands up for him in that moment, by the way, and is like, it's because everybody knows Rhaenyra's kids are not, you know, Valyrians. Yeah. They're Strongs. And he's like, if anybody else speaks anything of it, like, that's it. I mean.
Right.
And it's supposed to be about Aemond losing his eye. Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, he did go take a dragon, you know, that maybe he. You know,
shouldn't have taken, whatever.
But still, I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, it's there. He does deserve some, you know, empathy. By the way, you know, this is a theory we talked about that we have no. This isn't spoilers, but we talked about Jimmy during the iceberg last year when we did all the crazy theories, and something that may come more true is like there's the idea that those kids might be Aemond's. Not Aegon's, because remember, go back to season one and Aegon doesn't even want to marry Helaena, and Aemond is like, I would marry her, I'd fulfill my duty. And then we see scenes when it's the older people and Aemond is in her room when Alicent walks in and she's playing with the kids. So if blood and cheese happened, and that might not be Aegon's kid who was lost, that might be Aemond's kid who was lost in blood and cheese.
Yes, definitely. And you know, that's something we can play around with, speculate, and adds a whole nother dimension to things. But I think even as it exists today, like Aemon, Aegon, and Alicent, the one character that is not, that is evil, or I should say bad, is Kristen Cole.
Oh, 100%. Oh, yeah, There's no redeeming qualities.
I absolutely hate this guy. And yes, he is on Team Green, but for a television audience.
He's on team Kristen.
Hold on.
Team Black.
Was he not victimized a little bit by Team Black early on?
Kristen Cole is on team whichever.
Stand with me.
Yeah. Team Kristen Cole is on, which is on Team Simp. All right. And whichever woman says
not laid. That's it.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, they do such a good job. I mean, as we're, you know, talking about both sides here, every character, like at one point, Alicent is like pissed at, you know, Rhaenyra for being promiscuous like that. And then she herself is over here doing it, right? It's just this back and forth. And then, you know, Rhaenyra now is, like you said, kind of vanilla this season, going backwards and seeking this resolution with Alicent. You're like, well, that's really freaking awesome, you know? And so they do a really good job, I think, of showing us both sides of the coin and going back and forth. And that's why you get this side versus that side and all the ebb and flow between the two. And it's fun to pick a side, but then be careful because the next episode, you're a little disappointed. You're like, dude, that was bad choice.
That was
awful.
That was terrible.
I can't believe I defended you last episode. This is what the heck, man? I mean, some people are wanting Otto Hightower to come back. And I'm like, what? Come on now. This guy's, you know, I mean, stability in the realm, maybe, but, you know, the
experience.
But, you know, you see what he does inside of his own family with Alicent. And it's just sort of, It's grimy. Yeah. It's grimy.
Pretty gross, but he also has an amazing thing where he just tells Aegon and Kristen Cole they're both boobs, and he's like, "You guys are idiots." And my God, do I miss Viserys? And in that moment, I was like, "Let's go, Otto, dude."
Yeah,
I love Otto at that moment. So
that was sick.
We got to look at. Yeah. I know there's teams, okay, right. But I think maybe what the show is trying to do by giving us all these conflicting scenes with every side. Is that we're supposed to actually look at the individuals. Like, we're supposed to be looking at individuals, regardless of what side there is. I like people on both sides of the coin. I think Kristen Cole is a great hateable character, and you have to remember that for television audiences, they are going to numb or dumb down a little bit of the nuances from the book. Like, they did that in Game of Thrones, too, very much so, right? Stannis is way better in the books, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot to consider when you're talking about an adaptation, how much fidelity to the source material matters in that instance, and what you have to change to get people to tune in each and every week. And I'm not talking about people like us who might go on Twitter or Reddit or go on podcasts. I'm talking about my mom and Matt's mom, you know, and the people who want to tune in and root against somebody that exists. So there has been a little bit of, I hate the term whitewashing, but there's been a little bit of a tweak to make Rhaenyra seem, you know, mostly good. But just remember, the whole story isn't done yet. And I think that we will feel very different about Rhaenyra within the, you know, next probably 6-7 episodes. So,
Yeah. I always try to flush out whitewashing, you know.
Flush it out.
Here, I want to pull this up too, because this was we got a lot of comments about dragon sizes, right?
I was wrong.
Well, I don't think necessarily that you were wrong when we also, I believe, if I go back and quote, I think we were talking about Maelys being the second largest dragon in like Vermithor is just out there. Nobody is currently riding Vermithor,
which is a mistake. He's awesome.
He is awesome, and he will get a dragon rider. I think perhaps maybe even this week. I think the dragon seeds, by the way, is going to be.
Major
spoilers, but I do believe dragon seeds is coming soon. So, anyway, so I wanted to pull this chart up because I did a bunch of digging to see if there are any official breakdowns of dragon sizes, and it turns out that there are not. This chart is used quite often. It's a fan. Estimate. There is no official dragon size comparison. In fact, everything I could find in my reading shows that a lot of times, actually, when they talk about dragons being larger than the others, they simply just use the words like bigger or a quarter of the size. But there is no, that's all it says. It doesn't say like if that is length and width or if that is like weight. So, you know, like a dragon could be the same size, but way more, so it's, you know, more round. But that, so I mean, obviously we know that some of the dragons are like, you know, just bigger in general. And then even down here on this chart, you know, it says based on A Dance with Dragons, like Drogon, Rhaegal, and Viserion are like some of the smallest ever, which we do know, but the show actually makes them bigger than they are. Like, and some people have done breakdowns to be like, well, you look at Drogon's head standing next to Jon Snow, Kit Harington is X tall time, you know, and like sort of space it out to try to figure out, because some actually breakdowns of the show verse, I've seen other charts, but this one is typically the one that's used mostly on Reddit and like a lot of YouTuber theories and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Say that actually like Drogon is probably in Game of Thrones the size of like a Maelys or like a Syrax. Like that's how he's reached that size towards the end of Game of Thrones, but there is no official size thing that exists at all.
Okay, it makes me feel better.
Yeah. But yes, by all accounts, Vermithor is bigger in some regards to mainly, but I don't know. A lot of people just brought it up in the things, and I was not. I
they're big guys.
Think of it. They're all dragons
are huge. Yeah, I mean,
and my car's huge. Yeah.
And it's my fault because I'm the one who is stating it like fact. So I also,
the way I interpreted what you were saying was that Maelys was like the second largest
claimed
of the dragons. Claimed. Yeah. Which currently the only claimed ones, you know, would be like Vhagar and, you know, you got Craxes and Maelys. So yeah, you weren't. They're all big, dude.
Yeah. They're all big.
Yeah.
It's a good way to put it.
Yeah. They're all big. They're all big. So, okay. So now I'll pull up the YouTube thing here real quick, and we can just dive into a bunch of, because we got a bunch of comments on all the videos and everything. And somebody's left us a big one. He's like posted it three times and I keep missing it. So I want to try and get that brought up here. But okay. Oh, that's episode three. 1 second here. Let me pull up episode four review here. Halfway through the season, which is just wild to think about.
That makes me sad, actually.
It does. It makes me sad, too. this episode reminded me of, this is from Tay-Tay Queen. This episode reminded me of Allison in the last episode telling Rhaenyra, Aemond, you know what he is. Both factions know this is a monster unleashed.
They're saying that of Aegon?
Of Aemond.
Oh, of Aemond. Oh. Okay, of Aemond, yes. I thought we meant Aegon at first, and I was like, I think Aegon is not a monster. Aemond? He might be. He might be just that.
Yeah. I wonder, this is from Chilled Kiwi, I wonder how Aegon, if he survives, will deal with knowing that Aemond tried to kill him. Also, that sequence with the prophecy and the riders getting ready was beautifully edited.
Yes, it was beautifully edited.
That is something where it's gonna be, that is going to be interesting to see, is the fallout of Aegon and Aemond.
Yes. I mean, don't you guys think that he's just going to be terrified of him?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I wonder if he's able to, you know, I don't want to, I know we're not doing any spoilers or anything, but that he'd be, terrified or pissed, right? He might be one of the two. Mm-hmm. I would imagine, like, if he's able to, we don't know his state, we don't know his condition. And so, we know he's burned up pretty bad, but is he going to be able to recover? How long does he take? All that good stuff. You know, is we'll have to see the next episode what they do. But yeah, I think he'd be absolutely ticked and maybe terrified. He did back down in that small council meeting, right? He really did back down when they started speaking Valyrian. So I think he does fear his brother in that regard. So yeah.
We got a lot of people saying stuff about the jump. How did Vhagar get the jump? On not one but two dragons. I mean, how's Vhagar so sneaky?
I saw a really good breakdown of why they wouldn't be able to hear Vhagar. I can't remember. It might have been Fantasy Haven, or it could have been David Lightbringer, but they were basically saying that because Vhagar is so big and his wings are so big that he doesn't have to flap them as often. So he can actually, like, flap once, cruise really low to the ground, and they can't see him or know he's there. And then obviously he was over the cliff, right? Yeah. So Rhaenys is probably going to do the once around. I saw more people upset because it was like, again, right? Like, they just did it again. But I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I think, he's huge. Yeah, she's huge.
Yeah. And then we said this too. This is from, looks like Lauren here, saying, even though I knew it was coming, it still killed me to see. Not ashamed, but it made me seriously tear up. Yeah, same thing with Rhaenys dying. Man, I knew it was going to happen.
Dude, when she looks back at Rhaenys, Maelys looks back at Rhaenys like, this is it? And she's like, yeah, is it?
Like, yeah, I saw somebody else post something about it, and it's talking about the way that Maelys looks back at her is almost in a way like, I'm sorry, as if like it was my fault. It's like, bro.
I can't handle that, dude. Knock it off.
No.
Oh, my God. Bro, it reminds me of the scene in... it's much different, but like in I Am Legend with Will Smith and the dog, I cried like a baby during that movie. I get the same.
That's why I had such a hard time trying to read Assassin's Quest, man. Or
oh God, yeah. Robin Hobb's not very nice to animals. Yeah.
Once he kicked the dog out, I was like, I can't. It's hard to do. Yeah. And I've seen somebody else talk about that too, talking about how, you know, we've already, the preview for next week, we know they're going to drag the dragon's head through the streets, right? And sort of parade it around, similar to the way they do. And talking about actually how, I think that actually was whose dragon was it? Was whoever's dragon it was before that. It's like, that's still one of your ancestors' dragons. Like, in a way, that's kind of disrespectful, you know?
They call it a traitor dragon, as if the dragon made the decision to turn back on these artificial factions. I mean, it's just that, by the way, that does make the greens look really evil. I gotta say, it does not make them look great. That'd be like, you know, killing someone's dog and parading it around on a little red wagon around your neighborhood, you know?
Yeah. This guy, Scammy Jammy says, I felt bad for Sunfire. I did too. Mm-hmm.
Poor Sunfire. You know, I felt bad for all the dragons.
Not his fault. And then Sunfire has like his tail wrapped around like Aegon, like trying to protect him when he's on the ground.
Oh, jeez.
Dragons. Feel bad for all of them. All right. This is the one I was thinking of. So this is from College Chemistry Tutorials, which, by the way, I looked at your channel. Just keep doing what you're doing, man, because your channel will be big one day. And he's like, I think it's like 900 subscribers, but like, I don't know anything about college, but tutorial videos, those blow up. So just keep plugging away.
Love it.
Sir Matt and Sir Jimmy, I'm rereading John 1 of A Dance of Dragons and came across this Melisandre quote. John meets with Stannis, then Melisandre, and John exits the King's Solar, and she tells John, when I gaze into the flames, I can see through stone and earth and find the truth within men's souls. I can speak to kings long dead and children not yet born and watch the years and seasons flicker past until the end of days. It gave me a pause. Do you think this could play a role in House of the Dragon? I'm not saying Melisandre is Alice River, but mayhaps Alice Rivers has a similar power. By speaking to kings long dead, these characters with this ability may know of Aegon's dream. Also, I'm the fan of me was hoping Patty returns in a vision as well, essentially. Great work and always can't wait for follow-up Friday. Next episode. Cheers. Does she have Weirwood powers?
See, this is one of those things where we gotta try to decipher where the fantastical stuff comes from in Game of Thrones and A Song of Ice and Fire. Like, is R'hllor an entity and then the Weirwood magic an entity, or is it all in the same pool and then people just evoke it in different ways, right? Because that interpretation allows for basically shared powers. You know, you might have one person that's really into the old gods, one person's into R'hllor, one person's into the stranger, but they can all accomplish the same thing almost by accident, right? Like, they have rituals that end up working. So it just depends on what your belief is of where magic stems from in the world.
Yeah, I guess
we did talk a little bit about that kind of stuff in our Patreon episode, but yeah, I do think there is something going on with Alice Rivers that is like much bigger, connected to old gods, magic. It's all connected.
It literally freaking is. And actually, Jimmy, like, I've always subscribed to the idea that it's blood magic, dude, or it's something that everybody can tap into, and so they have connections, they have their own cultures and historical kind of origin points that affect how they storify it or how they talk about it, but yet it is somewhat connected, and there's similarities between a lot of the different powers and stuff. So yeah.
Rhaenys and Meleys got a lot of kills in at Aegon's coronation, right? Then at the Battle of Rook's Rest, team small folk.
Jesus.
Small folk will have their day. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Dang.
Continue on here. I had the same thought about the dagger. Alice is also rumored to be a woods witch. Let's see here. Yeah, you said you brought up her accent a little bit. Somebody else brought that up here too. My first thought when I heard Alice speak was, where is this girl from? Downtown Manhattan.
Yeah, I did say I love the casting, but I thought that the dialogue was like, her accent kind of threw me for a loop. I couldn't figure out what was going on. But maybe it was just a soundstage thing. I mean, that could absolutely be it. I need to see her again in this episode. By the way, I don't know, do you guys think we're going to get a bunch more Harrenhal stuff? Because like, they were showing Daemon doing anything other than apologize to his wife, you know, trying to fix this old castle. He's like, I ain't going back. I ain't saying sorry.
And Damon's just Bob the Builder over there at Harrenhal. All right, well, let's just
you know what it kind of reminded me though of? It kind of reminded me of Amityville when the dude's chopping wood behind the house, just going crazy. I kind of got that vibe from Daemon in the preview, him chopping. I'm like, oh, is he gonna like just start literally losing his mind?
I mean, it seems like he is. I mean, I wonder too if even like, this is just speculation, nothing spoiler, but it seems like he's being controlled. Maybe he does want to go back
I think he's drugged.
Yeah, that's why she's got him staying there. Right. I mean, maybe staying there, like, that's why he's, you know, they're just tacking up boards and trying to rebuild.
And he drinks her little potion or weirwood paste, whatever it is.
Why would he do knew that. Earlier, he was like,
I did see that. Somebody was like, hold on a second. So he's like, these peas might be poison. This brew, this like woods witch has given me. Well, all right.
Herpes. Yeah. Herpes. You know,
yeah. I mean, but he immediately sees his dead wife after that in a meeting, a very important meeting. And it's like, she's clearly having a negative impact on him, at least diplomatically. Yeah. So
yeah,
maybe she is gaining control of him.
Right. Yeah, it could be.
Ooh. Maybe she wants him to repair Harrenhal because she's all hoping to sit in there one day.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Woo. All right, guys. Wild.
Banger.
All the thoughts, all the theories. Woo. This is a big episode. We also recorded that Patreon episode. So for us, we did it back to back. So we just did like 2 hours of recording here. Woo.
Feels good. Feels good right now, you know?
It does. Ah, man. Awesome. Hey, as always, thanks for coming back on, man. Dude. Where can people find you on the internet these days?
Yeah, I'm right now talking about the worst show on the internet. It's called Star Wars Acolyte.
we better be careful, or we might get demonetized.
Oh, sorry about that. My bad, dude. I just ruined the show. Sorry. So I'm over on, you can check me out at YodaStew77 on Instagram, over on the YouTube there. But my God, I'm not having as good of a time over there. Right. So I appreciate being able to come over here and talk about a show
this as. It's like, I thought that nerds were afraid to watch shows with strong female lead characters, which is why people don't like The Acolyte. But
right. I mean,
does House of the Dragon not have some great, strong female lead characters?
Dude,
we spent the entire time talking about how awesome Radius is.
I know. It's like you have sci-fi nerds and fantasy nerds, and fantasy nerds are way nerdier, okay? They're playing, you know, D&D and stuff, right? Which is freaking awesome. But I mean, this show is rocking it. Whereas that show is just not, sometimes just a bad show. So anyway, hoping to have Matt on
modern day hip hop and Star Wars.
It's a joke, but still, we'll talk about the originals over there at some point. So if you hear that Ez is talking Star Wars and you're like, I'm out, well, we'll be talking about other things that are better right now. Right now, this show just kind of blows, but doing that. And then also still talking Harry Potter over with my wife on Shell Cottage Radio. So if you guys wanted, that's always chill, real chill and magical, so you know, come check that out. But thanks for having me again, guys. It's freaking awesome. Go check out that Patreon episode, because I'm telling you right now, that was deep, sweaty, tinfoily. That was everything you wanted to be, and I'm telling you, go check it out. It was freaking sick.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, hey, as always, guys, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing House of the Dragon, episode 5 of season 2.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.